Let's begin our nighttime relaxation. You've never felt more... Feel your eyelids getting... Now let yourself lay back and get a good night of... When cold and flu symptoms won't let you sleep, ask for Night Nurse. Its unbeatable strength helps put cold and flu to bed. Only available at the pharmacy counter. For cold and flu relief, visit dayandnightnurse.co.uk/verify for verification. Always read the label.
You're listening to the People's Podcast.
I was honest. Was I brutally honest? Yes. But I think that that's the problem. Everybody's so scared to be honest with one another.
This is JSC Radio.
Silence is the voice of the oppressor. Oftentimes, your silence is choosing a side. Exactly. Like, you know what I mean? Which causes harm often. And then also, I think, like, what people deem non-bias is generally, like, what they really mean is, like, no, come at this as if you are coming from the perspective of a rich, white man who's slim and who is a Christian. Anything that that person would, and did I say straight? Yes. And that person, anything, that's what I meant. Like, all of those things, like, that is what people deem to be non-biased, but that's so unfair. And it's also, it still comes with bias. It's just that you can't delete your perspective in this world, and everyone's is, it's different, and it matters in the way we move through this world. And, you know, like, you can be Christian and still tell a story very fairly about an atheist.
Exactly.
You know, but that doesn't mean that you have to pretend that you didn't go to church Sunday.
You're listening to the People's Podcast. This is JSC Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, how's it going? Nah, you know I gotta do. Hey now, my name is J. Scott Smith, and this is the 105th episode of the People's Podcast. This is JSC Radio. How's it going, y'all? Welcome to all my first timers. Welcome, damn it, welcome once again, my friends, to the podcast that never friggin' ends. I want to thank those of you who are joining us for the first time. Thanks to our guest on this week's show. I'll get to her in a second. I want to thank each and every one of y'all who supports this show, of course, across all the different podcast providers. I'm talking about Apple Podcasts, iTunes, on SoundCloud and Stitcher. Shout out to those of you who are checking out the show for the first time on radio.com. Yes, that edition got made shortly after episode 104 dropped last week. And I want to give a big shout out and a big what up to, of course, Antoinette Newton Akwa for coming on episode 104. The YouTube version of that is already up on the YouTube page, which is bit.ly/JSCTube. You can also hear the show, of course, on Audio Boom, on Stitcher. Be sure to get your 1 month free of Stitcher Premium by dropping in that promo code JSC. You already know what it is. You get one free month. Tell them I sent you. Also, big up everybody who's listening on Audio Boom. Make sure I get the name right here. I'm rattling through these so quickly because I really want to get to this guest. Of course, I want to thank all of y'all who have supported the show across every different platform, including iHeartRadio and on Spotify. Be sure to follow me on social media. You can follow the show on Twitter at JSC Radio. Follow the show on Instagram at JSC Radio. Follow the show on Facebook at JSC Radio. And of course, you know you can follow me, J. Scott Smith, at JAYSCO, 2 T's, SMITH. Thank you so much for joining J. Scott Confidential this week. As I mentioned before, the name has always been J. Scott Confidential, but now we're just putting some respect on it. And speaking of putting some respect on those names, our guest this week is Miss Brooke Thomas, and she joins us from the Young Turks. I want to thank them for helping get this whole thing together. But before I go into this, I haven't gotten off on a sports tangent in a while. And normally, the way that the format is, quote, changed on the show, I tend to kind of shy away from going on a lot of my old school monologues when it comes to sport. But this one is needed because... And I'm going to try to make this as quick as I possibly can because I could go on this for 2 hours. But Colin Kaepernick, which, by the way, in case you didn't know, I am 100% in support of the man. So don't think that I'm going to be following the pattern of head assery that has been going on amongst my fellow black men in media as well as other people in media in general talking about this. But I'm going to get this out of here real quick. Get this off real quick. It sincerely bothers me watching the continued. I mean, I will say this much for the Colin Kaepernick narrative. Y'all just don't seem to run out of ways to prostitute this thing and try to contort it into a way that suits your point of view. This asinine notion after that rather fraudulent, quote unquote, workout that he had last week from the NFL has been seeing an inordinate amount of black men in media towing this very bizarre line, saying over and over again, he didn't really want to play in the NFL because he didn't do all the things that they wanted them to do, including signing a waiver that had a couple of clauses buried pretty deep in it that no attorney worth his salt would ever let a client sign, that would largely indemnify the NFL, A, against any injuries, in case, you know, he blows an ACL or blows an Achilles while running around out there, and B, you know, indemnifies them from ever having to actually sign him, meaning he could go through this dog and pony show and they won't sign him and he can't sue them again. And then there's also the whole idea that they tried to basically ram this thing through and give him a quote opportunity to you know, work out, but also at the same time they had no real they had no real intention of doing anything with him. But yet all I've seen since late Saturday are certain individuals who happen to look like me getting on TV, getting on radio, getting on their podcasts, getting on print, whatever, and letting the head assery just get completely out of control. I promise I won't take too much longer with this, but this has been bothering me. I think the thing that bugs me the most, and I think the thing that bugs these guys the most about Colin Kaepernick is when you think about all the scenarios when these guys have had to go through getting back into the league, because this is a league that has welcomed back such individuals as guys who have beaten up their wives, guys who have beaten up their kids, guys who have killed dogs, dudes who have run drugs, dudes that have done drugs, dudes that have beaten up random people on the street, people who have committed DUIs, killed people. They get all these second and third and fourth chances. And they get all these second and third and fourth chances because they basically grovel at the feet of the NFL. Antonio Brown is groveling at the feet of the New England Patriots to be allowed back into the league. These guys are all dudes who, in most common parts of society, would never get a second shot at a real gig. There are guys who have been suspended for multitudes of reasons. Greg Hardy got multiple chances in the NFL and showed very little contrition for what he did to those women. The reason I bring all of them up is to say this. Those are guys who legitimately should have been kept out of the league for one reason or another. Michael Vick and Plaxico Burress served prison time and were welcomed back with open arms because they came back to the league on their hands and knees. They came back begging to get back in because they all know that they f***ed up. They done f***ed up and they found a way to end up out of the league. The difference between these guys and Colin Kaepernick is Colin Kaepernick didn't deserve to be pushed out of the league. He did nothing wrong. Nothing. So when you hear Dender Mifflins like Rex Ryan get on ESPN and say that I couldn't have him in my locker room, he's a distraction. Oh, Rex Ryan, the same guy who brought Richie Incognito into his locker room. The same Richie Incognito who got himself essentially booted from the league for hazing and peppering him with racial slurs. The same Richie Incognito who attacked an innocent man at a gym. The same Richie Incognito who showed up at a funeral home with a car full of guns and still gets chances in the NFL. You don't want that kind of distraction, though, in your locker room. God forbid. The same Rex Ryan who himself was a massive distraction while he was the head coach of the New York Jets. While he himself was running around on stage with Donald Trump, knowing full well you got a locker room full of black players who hate themselves some Donald Trump. In the midst of Kaepernick protesting police violence and police brutality, you're on stage with Donald Trump as he mocks NFL players who have concussions. But please, let's keep Colin Kaepernick out of your locker room. A lot of this comes from, a lot of this head assery comes from this idea, and I see it from a lot of black men, and it's something that unfortunately I see a lot of in the industry I work in, and I've seen a lot of it in a lot of the different industries, is that even if we weren't wrong, We need to assume the posture and position that we are. We need to, quote, go along to get along. And you just look at the same line of thinking coming out of all these dudes, the Stephen A. Smiths and the Jason Whitlocks and Tiki Barber, which again, Tiki Barber, a guy who had a near Hall of Fame career as a running back, who was so disliked in the Giants locker room that they celebrated when he was gone. In fact, as soon as he left, they won a Super Bowl. That's where Tiki Barber is. The same Tiki Barber who, while he was at NBC, cheated on his wife, his pregnant wife with an intern, has the nerve to say he's disappointed in Colin Kaepernick for not properly bending the knee, you see what I did there, to the NFL. This notion that you have to go along to get along, you have to apologize, you have to humble yourself, it makes no sense. And since Kaepernick refuses to fall for the respectability nonsense of dropping to a knee and humbling himself and going along to get along like so many of these other dudes do, it drives them up the wall. And we're left with dudes who are shaped like big toes and thumbs, wagging their judgmental fingers at a dude who refuses to simply do what they did and cave and be like Antonio Brown begging for forgiveness on Twitter. The difference is Kaepernick has nothing to apologize for. He doesn't have to beg for forgiveness. He didn't do anything wrong. That's why he's not doing it, nor should he. And maybe if some of these dudes had a bit of a spine, they would understand that. But they're too busy going along to get along. And what we're going to get along to is our amazing guest. Coming up after this break, we will switch gears and get ready to have a conversation with Brooke Thomas, a host from the Young Turks Network, right here on the 105th episode of the People's Podcast. Its name is J. Scott Confidential, but you can call it JSC Radio. And we'll be back with Brooke Thomas coming up after this.
You're listening to the People's Podcast.
I'm not going to be responsible for what happens next.
This is JSC Radio.
Hey now, J. Scott Smith here. Of course, you know I am the host of JSC Radio, which you have heard on Stitcher from the very beginning. Because in case a lot of you don't remember, Stitcher was the first major podcast platform to pick up my show. And now they want to give something back to each and every one of you listeners on Stitcher. Introducing Stitcher Premium. You can listen to some of your favorite shows ad-free, mind you, with Stitcher Premium for only $4.99 a month, or if you prefer, $34.99 a year. You can get access to Stitcher Originals, bonus episodes, comedy albums, and so much more. Listen to shows like The Fantasy Footballers ad-free, or you can get shows like Dunk on Basketball and, of course, JSC Radio. Simply go to Stitcher.com/premium to sign up today. That's Stitcher.com/premium to sign up today. And when you go there, drop in the promo code JSC. Get you one free month of Stitcher Premium. Don't ever say I ain't do nothing for y'all. Remember, it's Stitcher.com/premium to sign up today and get 1 month free by dropping that promo code JSC. It's just that simple, baby. Get on Stitcher Premium right now, and you can get the best in podcasting.
Let's begin our nighttime relaxation. You've never felt more. Feel your eyelids getting. Now let yourself lay back and get a good night of. When cold and flu symptoms won't let you sleep, ask for Night Nurse. Its unbeatable strength helps put cold and flu to bed. Only available at the pharmacy counter. For cold and flu relief, visit dayandnightnurse.co.uk/verify for verification. Always read the label.
You're listening to the People's Podcast.
You can't say F you to your granddaughter.
I just did, Morty. Here's dessert. F you.
This is JSC Radio.
Don't hate the player, hate the game, son.
Brooke, it's been a ride this year. I mean, 2018 has had its ups and downs. Everybody says that about every year. But we're 2018, right?
But it's been a year with me here with you guys.
Yes.
This has been the probably most, I say it all the time, like the most like welcoming newsroom experience. I've worked in a lot of newsrooms, a lot of nasty newsrooms, you know, and I've made some friends amongst that. But like, this has been the happiest, like, I don't know, experience of, and more than that, I've like, I always talk about like,
like this whole weird two sides things that like local news keeps making us do when they're not two sides to a lot of issues. Like murderers, bad. Racism, there's two sides. That's kind of like local news, that's their thing. And so analogy. I like that I get to stop that here. It's refreshing. I feel like it's responsible. So this has been outside of like all my friends here. I get to, I don't know, it's like I feel... It's such a great space here.
Do you actually have a date memorized for your, when you said it's been a year, and I was like, really?
No, it was like November 26th or something. I filled in on Pop Trigger with Jason.
Oh,
like after Thanksgiving, you guys were all gone, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So, Brooke, you've been wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, and so that's one of the upsides of 2018 is that we got to spend the year with you.
This is the 105th episode of The People's Podcast. This is J. Scott Confidential, better known as JSC Radio. Welcome back. J. Scott Smith here. I was remiss in that first segment without shouting out my man's Doc Illingsworth, whose music you hear underneath you right now. Plus, biggest shout out to my man, Awesome Jones, whose title track, Blue Chucks, is the song that brings you into this podcast each and every single week. Once again, I want to thank each and every one of y'all who support the show across all the different podcast providers, including Apple Podcasts, iTunes, talking about SoundCloud and Stitcher, talking about Audio Boom. Big up to Radio.com, who's the newest host of this thing. Of course, shout out to CastBox, Spotify, and iHeartRadio, among so many others. It's not just those. They're all over the place. Just put in J. Scott Confidential, and I'm sure you will find us. So let's get over to our guest for this week. And our guest is a young woman who I have been looking forward to talking to for a while. Her name is Brooke Thomas. Brooke was born in Muskogee, Oklahoma. I can only think of two individuals from Oklahoma that I would love to talk to. One is Brooke Thomas, and the other one is Jim Ross. But I got lucky in being able to get Brooke today. She graduated from the University of Oklahoma, so she's the only person I'll be able to drop the word boomer on, and she won't get offended, it seems. She started her career in North Dakota and has since then worked in Lubbock, Texas, Dallas, Texas, Memphis, Philadelphia, and has been in Los Angeles since 2017, where since 2018, she has worked on the Young Turks. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about her path in media, how she got started, plus how she's able to navigate and balance things in this business, being obviously a black woman in media. So buckle up, y'all. We had plenty of time to talk about this earlier this week. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 105th episode of J. Scott Confidential, better known as JSC Radio. And let's get into our conversation with Brooke Thomas from the Young Turks.
So, Brooke, I can say that it is an absolute pleasure to be able to finally talk to you. After we've gone back and forth here. It's a pleasure to have you on JSC Radio, by the way. And thank you so much for doing this with me.
No, thank you for having me. I really do appreciate it.
I will say that in the prep I've done on you, on the person that you are, you have a pretty cool story going from the very beginning. You've worked your way through small markets. You've done the traditional route that so many people in media have done, whether it's radio, TV, whatever. And so many people see you on nowadays as on the Young Turks. And I'll get to your time on TYT. But I like to talk about people's stories first, like really where they start. I know you're from Oklahoma originally. And what first got you interested in wanting to go into media? How old were you when you figured out TV media is what you wanted to do?
You know, I have no idea. That's so weird that I don't think like a really strong point of when, like, you know what? I realized this is what I'm going to do. I think that in college, it felt more like, what else would I do? This fits. I think that I was raised by my grandparents, two very, very old people, like very old, like older than your average grandparents. And, you know, older people, older black people, especially, they love the news. They like the newspaper. They like to watch the news all day long, different versions of the news. And so I was right there with them watching the news, consuming the news. And I like it, watching Oprah, watching Entertainment Tonight, because we watched the channel, we watched everything. I just remember everything back to back. Those were the soap operas she watched. Those were, that was the news channel she liked. I remember the meteorologist's name. And then I was always kind of like a part of speaking activities or programs in like middle school and high school. And then here comes college, and we got to the point to where you had to choose a major, and it just made sense.
It just fit you.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. And you're from Muskogee, Oklahoma.
I am, yeah, a really small town.
Dude, I've heard of the phrase Okie from Muskogee.
But never met one, right?
Never met one. You're the first Okie from Muskogee that I have met. What was it like growing up in Muskogee, Oklahoma? My cousin actually worked in Lawton, Oklahoma in her first TV job. And she's originally from the South, too. And that was an interesting experience for her.
So she was at KSWO.
She was.
So
you know. Yeah, it's like that's where she started. And she's told me about the life in Oklahoma, just kind of it was different even for her growing up in Alabama. For you, what's it like? What was it like growing up down in that part of the country?
That's so funny because I thought I was from the South until I moved to Memphis for work. And then I realized that there's the Deep South. And there is the somewhat middle southern part of the country that really is just the country.
The mid-South, not at all Southwest. The South.
Right. It's not at all the South.
It's its own spot. And interesting you brought up Memphis. I know one of your early jobs was in the Dakotas.
My very first job was in North Dakota. Mm-hmm.
Everybody's got. So tell me about that, because I know I talk to a lot of students as well. And I tend to tell them is that generally your first radio job or TV job is going to be in a smaller market, one of those markets in the hundreds down low. My first media market was Lansing, Michigan. That was 112. And you started in North Dakota, mentioned parts of Oklahoma, different places. What was that experience like for you? Out of college, you get to North Dakota and you said it was miserable.
It was miserable. My first TV job was just awful. I was a bureau reporter about an hour away from the main station. I had no coworkers that I worked with every day. I shot everything, edited everything, which is fine. But I was by myself and it just was so weird. And I do know that still this business isn't always, super glamorous, and you are going to you have to make sacrifices that you could also look at them as kind of like investments in your career. Right. But I think that hearing, I was a kid who came from a family that didn't have a ton of money. Like I was, a good student, a hustler, and I wanted to be in this business. And I kept hearing all of, it's going to be this, it's going to be this, it's going to be really small, it's going to be this. But I think that I should have taken a little bit more time to be a little choosier, because I'm not sure that your first job has to be a horror show.
I think, and that's true, by the way,
it's not going to be perfect. But I think that sometimes we have a couple more options. And I don't know if I had to do everything, like move to the snow, tour a bureau, be an MMJ. I think that was too much. I think it was like pick one of the rough things.
You inherited all three. Right? You went with the combo meal. Give me that one in the middle, in a state with like 8 or 9 black people in it to begin with.
I know. I would hear that all the time. Like, you must be Somalian. And you know what? I don't know. Maybe.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't. Where are we going with this? I mean, 23andMe wasn't super popular then. I don't know.
Just had that conversation on the last episode where I find out that a large amount of me is like from either Cameroon, Nigeria, or Ghana, and it's those three. And when you walk into these smaller towns and these smaller markets and you're the only one there, the only one in the newsroom. And I hear that a lot in the podcast that you do too, Controlling Our Narrative, which has become like an obsession of mine going through all the episodes. I love that podcast. I love the format of it, because you guys, and thankfully on this podcast, we can say whatever too, you guys managed to shoot the shit about a lot of things that just go back and forth. And there's a lot of open dialogue there.
Yeah.
And I can tell with you, just from talking to you and having seen you, there is, we're kindred spirits when it comes to Black people in media. Mm-hmm. I feel that we both kind of come from the same idea where there's this idea of Black members of the media and in newsrooms where we often have to either temper what we say, we have to kind of toe a very fine line in these
places.
And and some of the things that I've heard you say at the same time, I'm just, as soon as I listened to it, it's like, geez, it sounds like we worked in the exact same place.
Worked in the exact same place, unfortunately.
What have some of your experiences, and we obviously don't have to talk about a particular market because apparently it's across just about all of them. What have some of your experiences been on both the positive and negative side? Because anyone who sees you, you're this attractive brown woman, not just Black woman, brown woman. And I've seen so often for so many years, there are Black women on television it's not too many that I see who look like us, especially when I was a kid growing up. There weren't a lot of black women. I can name two off the top of my head in Detroit even, who look like you. And I know that there are the pitfalls of being in newsrooms and the things that we put up with on a daily basis that I don't think people quite understand. It's different for a black journalist in these settings.
No, for sure. And I'm glad that you asked me also like the positives, because you're not often asked that. But when I worked in Memphis, I went there for an interview, and the news director, Ken Job, he picked me up, and then I went back to the station, sat in his office, interviewed with him. Ken is a black man who, like, everybody in this business knows. And then also another executive, Nick Burchett, like, met with him, met with a lot of the other employees. And then I think it was the next day, because I spent the night in Memphis and then came back to the station the next day. They took me to lunch. And I was really like, okay, I'm really vibing with this place. I like this city. I like these people. And Nick says, you know, I want you to meet someone. She'll be in a little bit. Mm-hmm. And the main anchor, her name is Merle Purvis.
Okay.
And she had been there. She's very popular. She'd been there for years, completely deserving of all of her popularity. And so he took me to her office. And so I go in her office and sit down. Mm-hmm. And we talked for hours. And that became... that I was already really interested in moving to Memphis and taking this job, but that I was sold. Like, I was like, there, nothing can compete with this. And she became, she's like a big sister to me now, but just like such a mentor, and such, just to have like another black woman, another dark brown skinned black woman who has been in this business for so long. And then also, like, sometimes I think you need a check too. You know, because you can get in a space where you think everything is bad, and you need somebody to be like, okay, no, you're tripping. Like, you know what I mean? You need someone that you trust. It just was so nice to have her. And sometimes we had difficult conversations, but there was everything was positive. Everything was about growth and learning, but just like someone who had my back and still to this day has my back. And I remember her coming in early to give me like a critique on a live shot that I had done during the morning show. And that was such a positive experience, as it's someone who just like genuinely wants you to be your best, and lots of compliments. And you know, so it wasn't just like her helping me be better. It was her being encouraging, and to my personal life, to my professional life. And so I want to be that. I always want to be that. When I was in Philly, I started this Facebook group. And it's a little private Facebook group, and I think we have like 800 or so members, but it's called Black Women on TV. Mm-hmm. And it is all black women who are on air, period, like in news. So any aspect of news, traffic, you know, reporter, anchor,
sports,
anybody who's on
everything.
Air. Mm-hmm. There's a couple people in Nigeria, someone in London. But just kind of coming from that space of my second TV job, my first TV job, I basically had no day-to-day coworkers. My second TV job in Lubbock, it was a good environment, but I was the only black person on air in the entire market. Yeah. And so it was kind of like, you don't really know yourself, you know, that early in your career. There's so many things. Like, you don't know what makeup works best. And then you have a consultant who comes in and the darkest color is like this color, and it's like, what am I gonna do?
Was it the palm of your hand? She pointed to the palm of her hand, by the way.
Oh yeah, that's right. So we're on video together, but I am forgetting that, you know, not everybody is gonna be able to see me. But yeah, so I wanted to just kind of like start this space where those same women who are starting out in this business aren't alone, because you have this group of women who have your back and who can be what Merle was to me, but online.
No, that's a good thing to bring up, because quite often we walk into these newsrooms and sometimes we're on that island. Like you noted, you were essentially on an island unto yourself in North Dakota and in Lubbock, Texas. You get to Memphis, which is a much blacker city, much more diverse. It's like
it was like 99.9%. I was like, what is this world?
It's so brown here. All these.
Wow.
My experience has been working in places like Lansing, Michigan, which is a relatively diverse city. It was like an oasis in the middle of the mitten in Michigan. But other than that, outside of Detroit, Lansing, and Flint, you're not going to have a lot of black places to work. You kind of have to get in and out of there. When I worked in New Jersey, I was kind of just stuck in the middle of this shore town where I'm like the lone black dude. It's not until I walked into my current place in Philadelphia where I was finally in a newsroom, was like, holy shit, I'm not the only black guy in here.
Yeah.
We can actually have rap conversations. We can actually talk the room at each other, and we know that, hey, man, that's not cool. Or maybe we should cover this from this angle or do this sort of thing. It can be very uplifting when you know you've got a crew behind you instead of having to be that person fighting from underneath all the time. And you've just got that one voice in there. And it can be stressful. And I know for being a woman, it's even tougher. It's hard enough on us as black men, but I know it's even harder on women sometimes really coming into these places and these
spaces. Yeah, for sure. And just like no one who kind of moves through this world like you, it's hard to have even some of the most basic conversations, you know, and not even from a malicious point at all times. It's just, you know, we're all different.
Oh, exactly. And you know, that's also kind of wondering, you don't want to get miscast as angry. If you speak up, that's like that's the code word for everybody is that, oh, you were angry and you were loud. You were aggressive.
And I think it's a negative stereotype that has nothing to do often with, the action that's being expressed. It's really just like has to do with the person who's saying that and their perspective of black women, even if they're smiling.
You mentioned Memphis, and in my research on you, you had an amazing story about an instance in Memphis where a gentleman was accused of a crime.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
And I found the video, I found the clip of it. It was fascinating to watch. I'd love for you to tell that story because I can't do it any justice, but it was one of those things I would tell students is that you always have to stay ready in case a story like that jumps off, and I'll let you go from there. But this was actually pretty incredible in Memphis.
Yeah, so my schedule in Memphis was kind of, I got to work, I don't know, did I get to work at 3 or? I don't remember. Let's say I get to work at 3. I'm on air at 4:30. And so I anchored from 4:30 to 6 and kind of throughout that time, the first hour and a half of the show, me and my co-anchor, I would always be out in the field and he stayed in studio afterwards because we had a 5.5-hour long morning show. Fox local stations, they don't have like the big 3 networks. They don't have a national network morning show. So the locals just kind of stretch it out through that time period. Just in case people don't know why we had a 5.5-hour long show. But throughout the first hour and a half, that's when, you know, I'm kind of figuring out like, you know, what's the top story in case something doesn't break? What would I want to cover? What should I be on to report on throughout the rest of the morning show when I'm out in the field? And there was a story about a woman who says that she was carjacked and 2 of her children were kidnapped in the middle of the night. It happened that night before. So just a few hours before, she says that I think the story was that she pulled up around midnight or so with her 3 kids in the car, I think like a 5-year-old, a 2-year-old, and an infant. And when she got out of the car, someone came from the back of the car around and they stabbed her with an ice pick or a pin or something like that and then jumped in the driver's seat. Well, the 5-year-old, I think, had the wherewithal to get out of the car as the car is like slowly backing out of the driveway. And then the 2 babies were in car seats and they're babies, you know, they're kind of sucky. It's kind of amazing that the 5-year-old was that brave. And kids later on, the 2 younger kids were both found in the middle of the night, you know, I think a couple hours later within, I guess, like miles of each other. But the mother was in the hospital and police say that the mother gave them a suspect, that she's saying the person who stole her car, who stabbed her, is a man that she knew. So we had this man's name and police had put out this information. We had this man's name. And so all that morning, we've been reading the story saying police are looking for this man. They say he's this, 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 and that. And I go out. That's the story I'm going to cover. So I go out and I think my live shot started around either 6:30 or 7. So I get to my spot. It's a neighborhood. During the breaks, I'm knocking on all the doors like, hey, does anybody want to talk? This happened to their neighbor. Nobody wants to talk. Nobody knows anything. Nobody wants to be on camera. Nobody wants to talk about anything. And maybe after my first live shot, I'm sitting in the live truck. We had this Hummer. It was a Fox 13 thing in Memphis. But I'm sitting in the Hummer. My photographer is outside. I think it was Randy. I think his name was Randy. And so he's outside messing with his camera. But I'm sitting in the passenger seat and someone knocks on the window. So I roll the window down. And I'm like, hey, what's up? And he's like, my name is. And he gives his name. And he says, my mom says y'all are looking for me. And I'm like, what? And so the name he gives me is the name that police are telling us they're looking for. And so it just kind of was like quick thinking. I think that one, when you hear that like this person allegedly stabbed someone, you're uncomfortable. You are nervous about being in their space. And then on another thing, I'm like, this person has been
accused of a crime but not convicted of a crime? And like, is it fair for me to not give him the same space to say his piece when I'm giving the police officer's narrative?
It's the innocent and guilty.
Right. And so it's, you know, it's not my job to make any decisions. And so I said, give me 2 seconds. And I rolled the window up and I called my producer, Shannon, at the time. And I'm like, listen, I think that we need to break in. I think we need to go on air. Like, you know, can this happen? This happened. And so she's like, oh my goodness, yes.
New this morning, a mother stabbed, baby girl taken, this unfolding overnight while you were sleeping. Fox 13's Brooke Thomas, live on Pleasant Road in Whitehaven, where this all happened. Brooke, what's the latest development here?
Yeah, well, this morning we've been telling you all morning, police say a woman was carjacked, stabbed, and her 2 kids went missing when the person who stabbed her, they say, took the car with the kids in it. Now, they found the 2 kids later, but all morning long they've been looking for the man they say did this. And we're told they've been looking for a man named Derek Fisher. I've been telling you that all morning long. Excuse me, Derek Pfeiffer, all morning long. A man named Derek Pfeiffer just walked up to me and said, he's Derek Pfeiffer. He wants to clear his name. We have him right here. Derek, so you're telling me that your mom woke you up and told you she's hearing about your name on the news?
Yes, ma'am.
What'd she say?
She said, she told me, what did I do last night? Boy, you did this, boy, you did that. So I know I ain't do nothing, so I put on my shoes and I walked over her house just to let her know. She know I ain't do nothing like that. She just know my full name, and she only been around me, and she don't been around nobody else, so she expect me to do something like that.
Who is she?
Nisha. That's her name in this house right here. Help her with the kids, everything, the whole house. She live by herself, by 5, 6 kids. She already know that I don't stay up no kids, and she was just crying to me because she got her kids back and stuff like that.
Why do you think police are looking for you? Why do you think they got your name?
Because she gave them my name. She know my full name. And if she don't, and I know how she is, if she can't get her truck or her kids back, she gonna put a name out here because this me. I be in these streets right here. I be over her house, and I be over there in 2 Line.
So I go out, and he's live on the air, says his name, and it's funny because I was nervous, and you know, this is like my second job because I was in North Dakota for such a short period of time, and there was such a different learning aspect when you are MMJ Bureau than when you're in, you know, a real newsroom. And so I was super green, you know, and I was so nervous. I remember I said his name. I feel bad like using his name, even though like you can find it, but I misspoke and said a different name, which was the name of like a popular basketball player at the time. We're told they've been looking for a man named Derek Fisher. I've been telling you that all morning long. Excuse me, Derek Pfeiffer, all morning long.
Oh no.
And I remember he corrected me. The guy behind me was like, no, it's this. And he went on air and he, you know, he said he was clearing his name, that she was confused, that they're friends, they hang out, and it just was a kind of a confusing story. But he talked for a while. And then as he walks off, he turns around and says,
all right, well, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
All right, there you have it. You're beautiful. And I remember my thought was, sir, not now.
My fam, this is not
focus.
This is not the time nor the place.
Right. And then after I was long gone from Memphis, he was acquitted from those charges. The jury found him not guilty.
So he was telling the truth. That's fascinating. In my research, I looked the guy up after the fact, and apparently he's recently been arrested for armed robbery. So he's actually sitting in jail.
Oh, again.
In Memphis right now. But he was cleared of what he was accused of then. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, now he's still in jail. Or back in jail, I should say.
Yeah. Wow.
That is fascinating because there are a lot of moments, and that is maybe one of the biggest stay ready type of moments, because sometimes you go find news and sometimes the news comes and finds you.
Yeah, you just got to be willing to talk to everybody. I think sometimes people go into these neighborhoods and don't want to have conversations with strangers. You know, I'm protected. I'm with a photographer. I'm with someone who has my back. I'm fine. I should roll the window down and speak to people, you know. And that's where, you know, you get some of your best stories. Not even like an incident like this, but just community stories. You get them from the community. You don't get them from press releases. You don't get them from the police. You don't get them from the school board. You get them from the people who live there and who watch your show.
And that is definitely one way to be able to maintain a good rapport in your community, is really getting out on that limb and talking to people. It's something that I tell students. It's something that I tell young journalists who are just getting in. Don't be afraid to jump out that car, get out on those streets, and actually talk to people. Coming up after this break, we pick up on more about Brooke's path that has led her to this major gig in Los Angeles, what it was like when she first got to LA, plus what it's like for her as a Black woman in media, and what advice she has for young Black women who are trying to jump into this business. My name is J. Scott Smith, and this is episode 105 of J. Scott Confidential, but you can call it JSC Radio. And we'll be back with more of Brooke Thomas after this.
You're listening to the People's Podcast.
Have you ever been unemployed? Were you nervous then? Yeah. All right. Man.
This is JSC Radio.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. It only takes a moment to make a moment. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org.
In celebration of the release of Disney's Frozen 2, we invite you to live your family winter adventure with Marriott Bonvoy. When you book a stay and eat at one of our hotels, up to two kids under 12 stay and eat for free. Magical destinations across Europe are waiting for you. So get ready for your unforgettable holiday with Marriott Bonvoy. Disney's Frozen 2 in cinemas November 22nd. Offer ends 27th December 2019. Terms and conditions apply. See marriott.co.uk for more details.
Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the People's Podcast. This is JSC Radio.
Doc Illingsworth.
This is the 105th episode of the People's Podcast. This is JSC Radio, also known as J. Scott Confidential. Welcome back. J. Scott Smith here. I want to thank all of you who support this show, all of you new guests and you first-timers, and you returning guests, all of you. Welcome. Damn it, welcome. Be sure to follow on social media. You can follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at JSC Radio. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at J. Scott Smith, J-A-Y-S-C-O, two T's, S-M-I-T-H. I'm Real J. Scott Smith on Facebook. And don't forget to subscribe to this show on YouTube, bit.ly/JSCTube. All right, bit.ly/JSCTube. Hit subscribe and hit that notification bell so you don't miss another update when this video jumps onto the website within the next week to 10 days. So let's get back into this conversation we're having with Brooke Thomas, and we'll pick things up talking about reporter safety. As someone who is a reporter himself and who has a family member who's also in this business, it's always a harrowing thing, especially these days, to be out in that field and at times being wide open. Brooke talks about how she handled some of her business out there, and we, of course, will get into her path to Los Angeles. But let's get it moving. This is episode 105 of J. Scott Confidential, and we'll continue our conversation with Brooke Thomas.
In this day and age in journalism, is we find ourselves constantly having to kind of come up with different ways to do our jobs because it's dangerous out there, unfortunately, because I hear it all the time. I see it, especially on the TV side where TV reporters are wide open. You have women who are being harassed by dudes in the background or people trying to speak or trying to talk to them. I think as someone who's been out there, who's been in the field, very quickly kind of gives a little bit more of an understanding of how tenuous that can be, because you can have a great moment where you're having a back and forth with someone and there could be some jackass in the background trying to make a name for themselves, or they're trying to mess with you on air. How do you maintain your focus when you're standing in a situation like that?
There, you know what? I don't know. I don't know why I'm good at that, because sometimes it doesn't even come from the people around you. Sometimes it's what's going on in your ear. Sometimes the producer is talking to you. Sometimes you can hear yourself accidentally because of some button press. I don't know how I stay focused amidst, like, you know, wild things happening. But also, I think that you learn to focus in kind of, you're always on deadline. There could be a scene that's chaotic. I mean, think about, like, something in a bigger market, you don't necessarily cover these at all. But in a smaller market, you're at a house fire, right? So it's a really big house fire, and there's a lot of people standing outside, and you have got to figure out how to avoid the smoke, how to walk through and find somebody who actually saw it, who knows what's going on, who lives there, who is willing to talk. And you've got to make sure your photographer's over there so you can get things going at the same time. You've got to get all this information. And then you've got to rush over to a quiet place. You can write your story really quickly, and you may not have a laptop there to go through your sound bites. So you've got to, you know, go back through your notes, and you just learn how to focus while you're really, really busy. And I imagine, I guess, like, I've never really thought about it, but I guess, like the default from that is a bonus, is that you learn how to stay focused when somebody is, you know, doing weird stuff behind the camera, you know?
It's strange, but it's amazing how you're able to make a lot of that work. And I look at the path you've taken. You've gone from University of Oklahoma to North Dakota. You've been in Lubbock and Memphis and Philadelphia, and then you find yourself in Los Angeles.
In Dallas at one point.
Dallas too. That's right. So a couple of major markets, and now you find yourself in Los Angeles, and now you're on TYT, Young Turks.
Yeah.
How did that come about for you? When you got to LA, I know you were doing red carpet stuff. I remember seeing you do that. How did the opportunity come about with TYT?
So weird. I moved to LA because I signed a holding deal for a show on Fox Local. So kind of like Fox Local, like the real Wendy Williams, like this Fox syndication, that are syndicated shows that are on Fox Local stations around the country. I signed a deal for a show called Top 30, and it was a holding deal, which meant that I couldn't officially take another job all summer. But there were multiple women who were potentially going to fill this female co-host role who, one of them would be chosen. So it wasn't a done deal, but I felt really confident and good about it, you know? So I move out here, and I'm freelancing kind of in the meantime and taking meetings. And I was on my third meeting at E! News, and this guy walks in, and I just remember he was just beautiful and dressed so nice. And I was like, oh my goodness, who is this? Like, you know, like you get that vibe, like, I want to be friends with this person. Oh my goodness. And he sits down next to me, and we started chatting, and we ended up, they were kind of auditioning a bunch of us kind of for a panel show and moving people in and out and trying to see, like, you know, who linked with who, a little bit more of your personality while interacting with other people. And we're on set together and just had so much fun that we exchanged numbers afterwards and kind of kept in touch. And after the holding deal fell through, I didn't get that job. Actually, none of the women got that job. They brought in a different woman. After that, I was still freelancing, doing different like LA things. And he called me and said, hey, I have this co-host position. I know you freelance. I'm wondering, like, if you wanted to come in, like, this is what it pays, this is what it is, and it would just be this one day, and I'd like to work with you again. And I was like, sure, I'll do it. Like, send me the info. So I show up. We had such a good time together. And then I met some of the other people here, and then sent my reel to somebody here, JR, also here. So Jason Carter is the initial guy who brought me in, and then JR, he's the senior producer here. He checked out my reel and was like, oh, you should be doing stuff over on like our hard news section, like on our main show. And he got me on John. It's like my little trifecta. It's Jason, JR, and John. And then I started filling in on John's show. And then I joked that I just never left. But eventually I was here so often, like they would call me in so often to do things. And now I work here full time.
You're locked down. They got you.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it's a wonderful environment for you. It's a perfect fit for you.
It's a good environment for sure. Yeah, I do think it's a very good environment.
So what is it like working with some of the staff there? I know Cenk Uygur is obviously somebody who's associated most with it. And I remember he said something really glowing about you. Like they were doing a whole year in review. Like they did a whole thing. It was the year of Brooke Thomas. And he said he had all these awesome things to say about you. It seems like I see happiness when you're there. It's like it brings the best out of you there. And even seeing how you host and how you are, you managed to you add a different air and a different voice to the place. And they seem to have embraced that and really bring that out of you more.
I think that's nice of you to say. Thank you. I hope so. You know,
I think it's done pretty well. I would say you've done pretty well there. It's a very progressive network. Clearly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it seems like that fits more than anything else.
I think that word too means something different to progress is different depending on where you start, where your starting point is.
I would say in terms of since the time you've been there and the atmosphere around there, when you look at what you're doing for TYT, what would you say is maybe your favorite thing about being in there, about being on this network?
The newsroom, like my time in the newsroom, like my friends. I have made some really, really good friends in this business. Like I can go down the line of like my jobs and outside of North Dakota because I worked solo.
You were your favorite person in North Dakota.
I worked solo in North Dakota. But outside of that, I can like name like multiple people that like I consider really, really good friends from each of my jobs and think of like, just those moments when it like clicked, like, oh, this is my person here. Like, okay. But here there's a lot of those people. And that's been really nice.
And now that you're there and in this current political climate, which is something that TYT is very much deep into.
Uh-huh.
For you, what is that like being in a network such as this where it's not like you, it's clearly, it's nowhere near like Fox News or any of those other ones where it's highly polarized on the right. What's it like being in a place like this where they're very out front about their politics and very out front and open about the things they believe in and fight for? What is that for you? What's that like for you to be able to kind of openly express a lot of that too, being able to say what you really feel sometimes?
Yeah, I think that there's like an honesty that gets stifled in other aspects of this business that I don't fully have to worry about here. I think that, you know, I'm a Black woman in America. I can never not be political. Do you remember, oh my goodness, and I'm losing her name, and that's so weird because she's super famous, but there was a sheet cake segment on SNL about kind of like ignoring politics and eating sheet cake, and the pushback was like...
Oh my God, that is
right, it's happening to you, it's Tina Fey.
Tina Fey.
And so... The pushback was like, well, yeah, if you look like Tina Fey, you can eat sheet cake. But like if your actual livelihood depends on politics, like politics determined my right to vote, my right to sit. That wasn't too long ago, you know, like my right to sit in this space with my coworkers who don't look like me. Like so many different aspects of me being able to live my life to the fullest as I am right now are dependent upon politics or were. So I don't get to ever live my life, regardless of like what boss I have at the time and what they're saying to do and what the rules are at that network or at this place or at that place. I never get to delete that from who I am. And so here I don't have to, you know, and I think we talk about being non-biased and I do think I'm like kind of going on a tangent here, but I do think that like the type of journalist and who I wanted to be and like my responsibility changed dramatically for me after Trayvon Martin was killed. It was a really big turning point for me, I think, as a person and what I felt like my responsibilities were. And I do think that like when we talk about being non-biased, I think that everybody has a different perspective and there are things that you can't delete. And a lot of times, we're not necessarily being non-biased. What we are two things. Like you're being, silence is the voice of the oppressor.
Exactly.
And so oftentimes your silence is choosing a side.
Exactly.
Like, you know what I mean? Which causes harm often. And then also I think like what people deem non-biased is generally like what they really mean is like, no, come at this as if you are coming from the perspective of a rich white man who's slim and who is a Christian
and older. They skew older
so
too.
Anything that person would, and did I say straight? Yes. And that person, anything, that's what I meant. Like all of those things, like that is what people deem to be non-biased, but that's so unfair. And it's also, it still comes with bias. It's just that you can't delete your perspective in this world and everyone's it's different and it matters in the way we move through this world and what we learn and what we know and what we experience. that matters. And it's different for a lot of people. And I don't think that, you know, like you can be Christian and still tell a story very fairly about an atheist.
Exactly.
You know, but that doesn't mean that you have to pretend that you didn't go to church Sunday. Like, you know what I mean? And
no one
would force you to because it's a Christian thing. It's totally okay.
Yeah.
To celebrate straightness and to celebrate Christianity. It's okay to say thank God on the news. It's okay to congratulate a straight couple getting married and at a, you know, when it's a kicker at the end of a show in a small market. When we start openly celebrating things that affect marginalized communities, that is when people get like a little shaken, like, oh, it makes some people uncomfortable, but it makes a lot of people uncomfortable when you don't acknowledge it. Like, why don't they matter? And I think I always say, like, child abuse, murder, bad,
exactly.
All bad. No one says that you can't think murder is bad, but they struggle with saying you can't think racism is bad, or you can't just kind of call it what it is. And so I don't have to live in that space here, which is nice.
It's the conundrum that a lot of us deal with in newsrooms. Run into that. I've run into situations where I very openly called a spade a spade. You see it right there.
That's what our job is.
Exactly. It's one of those things where, like, I covered sports for years. And my thing is, if I look at a scoreboard and it says 104-98, that's not in dispute. Right. If the score was 104-98. If I look at something and see that's racist. You called somebody an N-word, you dropped all these racial slurs, that's racist. That's not up for debate. That's not one of those things where if a certain presidential candidate tends to have a whole lot of followers and supporters that happen to be a part of white supremacist groups, it's kind of easy to say that, gee, he kind of appeals to white supremacists.
Yeah.
But don't in turn send me an email and say, but you might be offending his supporters.
All right.
Ugh. But they don't see this as a problem. They don't see that as a deal breaker. In fact, some of them
like the businesses are still the perspectives and like who makes the decision. Those perspectives are still very heavy in one area. And not everyone who looks this way or identifies as this is unwilling to bend and learn. Thank goodness. But some still are.
And that's the tough part because it leads to issues that we run into. And it leads to occasionally our own reporters being marginalized or silenced. And it's so weird. And when you said that, it's like because generally speaking, you want to be able to call facts out and be more honest about that. You don't always get that opportunity to do so. I guess one last thing here, because this also brings us back to your podcast again, your podcast Controlling Our Narrative. What inspired you to get into this podcast game? How has that been for you? Because I've listened to it and I've listened to it kind of evolve slowly. It's gotten better each time I've heard it. How has that been for you, this process of getting into a podcast and doing more of this and being able to speak freely the way you do on there?
So it's a show that like I want and I wanted to see and I wanted to exist and that I wanted to be a part of. So that was part of it. And I think there are kind of two moments. One of them is during like the last presidential election go round, there was a lot of talk about middle Americans. And it was being used as a euphemism for white people.
Right.
I happen to be from Oklahoma.
I'm sitting here from Michigan, which is also middle America.
And so it's like Detroit, Milwaukee, you know, like none of this is
Indianapolis, St. Louis, Minneapolis, Chicago, you know, City, Kansas City. We can there's black people in all those places.
Even freaking like Columbus, Ohio. we don't exist. Atlanta, I would say that's somewhat like middle America. It's not a coastal, like it's not New York City. It's not Los Angeles. St. Louis, you know. And so, but that was just kind of taken as default. Like, yes, this is who we're talking to. And that ignores so many people. Most black Americans live in middle America. In this country. That was one part, just like wanting to be able to talk about how everyday stories affect us, black people who are also everyday people, and the importance of like not leaving us out of the conversation. And like, yeah, we should have a conversation about how climate change specifically affects black people in historically redlined communities that end up right around highways, that end up in how like pollution and And we should know that, and we should talk about that, and those things should be talked about. And also, I was at the Cork. It's this bar here in LA. And this was, I think it was like NBA TV that was on. And it was after the NBA draft. And they were talking about NBA fashion, and there was four white guys on a panel. There was like, and maybe it wasn't NBA TV. So let me take that part back. But I do know it was about the NBA draft. And there was a guy who like looked like he was from Miami, and he had like three or four like big dreads and his hat sitting on top. And there became this like conversation as if they didn't know that so many people in Miami look like that.
That is like, that, which is incredible, because there are whole sections of Miami where that's
where
just I was just in Miami for right. I was just in Miami for an ABJ. It's like right. There looked like that, and all over pretty much all over South Florida, just even Miami.
And, right, and so I think like one aspect of it is just that like, oh my gosh, we need to be acknowledged. Like our stories need to be told. Our stories need to be normalized. And the other part, it's like, okay, when our stories are told, we're not sitting at the table.
Not at all.
And then another part is like having, you know, conversations with my black friends, like with my family, like we don't always agree. We're so different. And I joke about this all the time. Do you ever like watch Survivor and you find yourself, it's just this thing that happens, because we do say like representation matters. And even as adults, we find ourselves like, it's hard not to be excited when the one person looks somewhat like you, right? And so like you're watching Survivor, right? And there's that one black person, you end up rooting for them, right? But it's so frustrating because you don't like them.
Like, sir, and I want you to win, but I'm not feeling you.
Right. And so how nice would it be if there were eight black people and you got to pick your favorite based on personality?
I can finally be like, I don't like this guy, and I don't feel guilty saying, homie, I want you to lose. Like, get the hell out of here.
Right. And so I don't know, meshing all of that together. So like bringing different voices and also normalizing like us. And how everyday news affects us as everyday people in America, and also normalizing like our culture in a way that people aren't shocked about things that are so normal to us.
Such little things as certain things that go on in black households for holidays, certain traditions, certain things mm-hmm. you're into. My mother's originally from the South, and there's a lot of stuff from Southern households that carry over into the Midwest because of the migration and everything like that, that people don't fully get. Like they'll look at us weird when there's certain things. It's like, that's just what we do. This is what we eat. And sometimes what we eat may not always be the best, but this is what we eat. This is what we dance to. This is what we're into. Our music, our clothing. There's so many different things. I just had the last episode. My friend is in Ghana, and there's Ghanaian culture is so much different from African American culture. And she told me about how she's had to she sees the differences between the two even more expressively now. But people don't get that, because at times we're just kind of written off as this monolith. Mm-hmm. And we are not, we do not operate as a monolith. We do think differently. We carry ourselves differently.
Somehow had the same mother who refused to take us to McDonald's without first asking if we had McDonald's money. But after that, we're different.
We might have all had the same mother who at some point told us to fix our face. I understand.
Exactly.
And admittedly, yes, I know I'm not one of your little friends. I get that. I know. Mama, I get it. Even now, I still get that. What is something, as we start to wrap this up, what is a bit of advice you would give to a young black woman who wants to come into this business and knows that there's going to be good days and bad days? What would you tell from your experience? What would you tell a young black woman coming into this right now? Say she's about to graduate and she's on her way in and wants to do TV, wants to do radio. What would you say to her as advice?
Oh my goodness. We are so much better and more successful and so much stronger together. So like, don't compete with the other woman at the station. Like, rock with her, support her, help her, be nice to each other, make friends. You know, obviously like, don't put yourself in if she's, you know, not like working, then obviously remove yourself from that situation, but check your competitiveness. Like, what's for you will be for you. And my life has been so much better, I think, when I was being helpful, like taking how Merle treated me. And I'm glad that like, that was like my first example, just someone who just has my back, and that I just got to learn. I think that like, life is so much easier when you can either be that person for someone, or when someone is that person for you and you're accepting of that. And I think that it's hard because this business pits everybody against each other. And there's so many insecurities because there may only be this position or this position, but you're not in competition with anybody. What's for you is for you. And even if you don't get the job and this other person does, it's because it's for them. Like, that's who they wanted in that role. And there's something else and something that's a better fit for you. And I think that, like, keeping your head kind of like locked on straight, like through that, as much as this business is competitive and it just can mess your head up, just like trying to shake the insecurities that I think this business can throw on you.
And we all have them. And
yeah.
We all had one point in our careers where we kind of questioned it. I can only think what it was like for you to move to LA and you were freelancing, and that freelance life is tenuous, and being able to keep your focus and keep your head through all that.
Sometimes, but once you get it down, it's so freeing. It's nice. You'd be like, wait, do I? When you can really lock it down, it's nice.
So how can people get in contact with you, and where can they find your podcast, and generally, where can they find you?
Well, stay out of my DMs, but you can find me on Instagram and Twitter. I'm Brooke on Air, Brooke with an E, if you don't know. And then my podcast, it's on iTunes, it's on Spotify, it's on every podcast listening platform, whichever one you like to use. It's called Controlling Our Narrative, and it's really fun, and I'd love to hear what you think.
That is Brooke Thomas. She's coming to us via Skype from Los Angeles. I cannot tell you how wonderful it is to be able to finally talk to you. And actually, and really, this has been so cool.
This has been fun for me too.
I swear, if you don't know who she is, you should get to know who she is, because you're going to see a lot of her. And she's missed here in Philadelphia. It's the first time I saw you. I remember turning on the
TV. I'm actually going to be in Philly, like, in a couple weeks.
Well, then definitely we have to get in contact with each other.
I haven't been back to Philly in so long, but I'm going to be in New York for something. And then my friend, Trang Doe, she's a reporter at KYW.
I owe Trang so much, because Trang helped me get my job. I've said this.
She's magic, right? She's just awesome. A beautiful person. She is. And so Trang had a baby, my little nephew. And so I am dying to meet him and to see him. And so since I'm going to be in New York, it just made sense. I missed the baby shower, you know, I missed the gender reveal. I have to go and spend some time with him and my other good friend there, Renee. She just got engaged. And so I was on the phone with Renee the other day, and I tell them that I'm going to be in New York, and it just made all the sense.
Well, we will be
to make that little 2-hour trek. So I'm going to be in Philly for a couple days.
Well, we will definitely be in contact. Brooke, this is wonderful. Thank you so much for doing this. Thank you so much for coming on JSC Radio with me. And obviously, I wish you nothing but the best of success.
Thank you so much.
It's always good to see you on TYT and everywhere else. So thank you so much for this.
Thank you.
And there you have it. Another one in the books. I want to shout out and thank the Young Turks for allowing Brooke to come on the show this week and be able to get everything set up. Do not forget to support Brooke's podcast, Controlling Our Narrative. It has become appointment listening for me, and it will be for you too. Be sure to search Controlling Our Narrative on any and all of your favorite podcast providers. And thank you so much once again to Brooke Thomas for coming on this show and enlightening all of us. To everybody who's brand new to this thing, welcome. Damn it, welcome. Thank you so much for supporting this show. Be sure to add us on all your favorite podcast providers. Be sure, of course, again, bit.ly/JSCTube to get on the YouTube page. Follow me on Facebook at J. Scott Smith. That's real J. Scott Smith on Facebook. On Twitter and Instagram, I'm J. Scott Smith. And be sure to jump on the page. It's JSC Radio, no matter where you look. Thank you so much once again. We're going to take a couple weeks off for Thanksgiving and then be back at your ass in the first week of December with episode 106. So until next time, my name is J. Scott Smith, telling you to take care of yourself. God bless. Always dare to be different. Always have your pet spayed or neutered. Help control that pet population. And we are out of here. Until next time, have a happy Thanksgiving and goodbye, everybody.
All right. Well, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
All right, there you have it.
You're listening to the People's Podcast.
So put that in your pipe and smoke it.
This is JSC Radio.
Thank you.
I heard on the news about that 5-year-old who found his uncle's gun. The kid didn't know it was loaded.
I heard on the news about that 14-year-old girl who was bullied online. For like a year, she couldn't take it anymore, so she got her dad's gun from his nightstand.
I heard on the news about that guy who broke into someone's house, stole a gun from the hall closet.
He accidentally shot his cousin in the head.
She killed herself.
And later, killed the owner of the store he was trying to rob.
If you own a gun, you have a full-time responsibility. When you aren't using it, be sure it can't get into the hands of curious children, troubled teenagers, a thief, or anyone else who might misuse it. Your family, friends, and neighbors are all counting on you. Remember, always lock it up. For more information on firearm storage safety, visit ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council, the Bureau of Justice Assistance, and the Ad Council.
Let's begin our nighttime relaxation. You've never felt more... Feel your eyelids getting... Now let yourself lay back and get a good night of... When cold and flu symptoms won't let you sleep, ask for Night Nurse. Its unbeatable strength helps put cold and flu to bed. Only available at the pharmacy counter. For cold and flu relief, visit dayandnightnurse.co.uk/verify for verification. Always read the label.
Tom.
Jessica.
I can't wait anymore.
Tell me.
I want your fingers all over my apartment keys.
Ah, I thought you'd never ask.
If commitment's your thing, get Match, the app for singles ready for real relationships. Match, start something real.